Espejos de Aztlán.
A talk show about our communities.
Cultura, educación, política.
Salud, inmigración, historia.
When?
Mondays at 7 p.m.
Right after all things considered.
Espejos on KUNM 89.9.
Un programa
comprometido con nuestra comunidad. Today on Espejos de Aztlán, we'll celebrate Labor Day, remembering the human right to work. Declared in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, adopted in 1948 by 48 countries, including the United States. Mrs. Roosevelt, widow of President Franklin D. Roosevelt, was recognized as the driving force for the Declaration's adoption. Let's remember the human right to work. My name is Cristina Bachin.
Everyone has the right to work, to free choice of employment, to just and favorable conditions of work, and to protection against unemployment. Everyone, without any discrimination, has the right to equal pay for equal work.
Even though the United States was the country that advocated for the statement of this human right among other human rights, we are witnessing a labor situation in New Mexico that doesn't respect this human right. First, we listen to the story of two young women telling us what happened when they went to work to a company and then they refused to pay them.
Cuando tú vas a trabajar es porque lo necesitas realmente, porque tu familia necesita ese ingreso. Ah, pues nosotros fuimos, todo se veía normal, nos trataban bien, todo. Fueron solo dos días a los que fuimos a trabajar ahí. Todo estaba bien hasta ese punto, hasta que nosotros volvimos el tercer día a la oficina para recibir nuestro pago. Y no, ellos solamente dijeron, no podemos pagar porque necesitamos un seguro social para poder darte un cheque.
Pero a nosotros cuando nos contrataron nos dijeron que no necesitábamos nada porque el pago iba a ser en efectivo. Y en el momento en el que fuimos contratadas, fue un trabajo solo temporal. Y no nos pidieron nada en ningún momento. Hasta el momento de recibir el pago fue cuando nos dijeron que para podernos dar el cheque necesitábamos un seguro social. Entonces nosotros preguntamos por qué no nos lo habían pedido antes, pues hasta que nos iban a pagar. Pero en el trabajo todo estaba bien, era normal y no era mucho tiempo lo que estábamos trabajando, como era temporal.
¿Cuánto les habían prometido que les pagarían por hora?
10.51 o 11.51, ni siquiera la cantidad del pago nos habían dicho, o sea, no estábamos seguras de cuánto es lo que íbamos a recibir. Pero nosotros no estamos peleando por el dinero, es el abuso hacia nosotros, y pues todos sabemos que nosotros buscamos un trabajo porque lo necesitamos.
¿Y en tu caso?
A mí en lo personal me afectó porque yo soy madre soltera. Yo tengo una niña y ese trabajo extra que me salió, dije, bueno, ya con eso le puedo comprar los útiles a mi hija, puedo comprarle los uniformes y estar un poco más desahogada con mis gastos, pero pues no fue así.
They said that when you go to work, it's because you really need it, because your family needs that money. The two women went to work, everything looked normal, and they were well treated. It was a temporary work of only 2 days. Everything was fine until the third day. When they went to the office to receive their pay, the employers said that they couldn't pay them because they didn't have a social security number. But when they were hired, they were told that they didn't need a social security number because the pay would be in cash. So, the women asked, the company representative, why didn't they ask for the social security number before? The company had promised to pay per hour $10.50 or $11.51, but actually, these women weren't sure about how much would they be paid per hour. The women said, "We don't fight for the money. We are fighting the abuse. If we look for a job, it's because we need it." One of the interviewees is a single mom with a daughter, and with that extra job, she hoped to be able to buy school supplies and school uniforms for her daughter, as well as to have some relief with her other expenses. And we are this afternoon on Espejos de Aztlán on Labor Day, September the 2nd, in our studio with... We welcome to Jerry Bradley, researcher of New Mexico Voices of Children, to Andrew Schrank, professor of political science and sociology at UNM. And we also have on a phone a recorded interview Marcelo Diaz, of the executive director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido. Welcome, Jerry Bradley and Andrew Schrank.
Thank you.
And... The main question after this, the first question after this interview is that we're relating, telling us their story, this is part of a studio research, recent study, Mexican Immigrants and Wage Theft in New Mexico. What's the situation of the Hispanic workers in New Mexico that you researched through this recent study, Dr. Schrank?
Well, I want to be very clear about a couple things. One is that this research was undertaken in collaboration with Jessica Garrick, a graduate student at UNM, who is now a student at the University of Michigan. And the focus of the research was not Hispanic workers in New Mexico writ large, but was Mexican immigrant workers, which is actually a subset of the much larger Hispanic population of New Mexico, obviously. And what we wanted to understand was the extent of wage theft, the wage theft like that described in the interviews you just played, which we define as the underpayment or non-payment of contractually obligated wages. And the challenge in understanding the extent of wage theft, not just in New Mexico but throughout the country, is that the most common victims of wage theft are undocumented immigrants. But undocumented immigrants tend not to show up in most of the existing surveys of the labor force in the United States. And so, like other researchers who try to understand this phenomenon in other parts of the country, we needed to carry out our own survey, an original survey. And in doing so, we followed the lead of a sociologist demographer at the at Washington State University named Beth Fussell. And Professor Fussell, several years ago in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, tried to figure out the extent of wage theft in the recovery labor force, which was largely immigrant. And she realized that the way to do this, or one way to do this, would be to go where the immigrants went. And she believed the immigrants went to the Mexican consulate. And the nice thing about surveying immigrants at the Mexican consulate is that most Mexican immigrants go there at one time or another, but they don't go there largely to report wage theft. They're not a disproportionately victimized subpopulation of the immigrant labor force. They're immigrants who go there to deal with immigration issues or with passport issues or to get the matricula consular, which is a consular visa that's given out by the Mexican consulate. And so there's reason to believe that if you look at the Mexican consulate, you will get a broadly representative subset of the immigrant population. And what we did was last summer, with the support and the collaboration of the consulate in Albuquerque, and also mobile consulates that the Mexican consulate deploys in Santa Fe, we surveyed 210 immigrants, about two-thirds of whom were undocumented, about one-third of whom were documented, and asked them a series of questions about their experience in the New Mexico labor market. And just to cut to the chase, we found that about 20% of the documented immigrants and 30% of the undocumented immigrants had experienced wage theft at one point or another in New Mexico. In many cases, they'd experienced this repeatedly. And we also found out that a substantial, albeit smaller than this share of those immigrants, had also experienced verbal and physical abuse and health and safety violations and a variety of other transgressions of their legal rights.
Let's listen how Marcela Diaz, executive director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido, how does she describe the victims, the main victims of wage theft through a recorded interview.
So the victims are lots of different kinds of workers. Of course, this study and Somos Un Pueblo Unido has been focusing for the most part on immigrant workers, both Central American and Mexican workers. This study studied the effects of wage theft on immigrant workers, but on Mexican-American workers. We've seen a number of folks come into the office really in the last 7-8 years with a host of problems when it comes to their workplace. They are oftentimes forced to work off the clock, as is the case of some workers at a car wash in Santa Fe, the squeaky clean car wash. That was their issue, and that's why they decided to organize a committee to try to recuperate their wages. Others are asked to, for instance, in the dairies in the southeastern part of the state, work a week or two training to work in the dairies and then not get paid for that training time and not necessarily guaranteed a job afterwards. So that's another issue that we've been seeing. Other folks don't get paid their last paycheck, which can mean difference between being able to pay your rent, not pay your rent, be able mm-hmm. to pay your mortgage, not pay your mortgage, perhaps get your car repossessed because you weren't able to make the payment. So it really does have an effect on many low-wage workers in the immigrant and non-immigrant community.
After this part of the show, we are on Espejos de Slam. We are talking with Jerry Bradley and Dr. Edward Schrank about New Mexico situation, the labor situation, and especially focusing on Hispanic and non-Hispanic white people. What's the employment situation of Hispanic people in New Mexico in comparison with other part with the other part of the population?
Looking at the most commonly used measure of the labor force, which is unemployment, which is people looking for work, we're looking at a problem that has grown much worse in the course of this recession. And the recession isn't over in New Mexico as far as the labor force is concerned. Unemployment dropped during the period of the late of 2005 to 2007, it dropped for both Hispanics and for non-Hispanic whites very far down. And that put it equalized to some degree median household income and even average earnings for Hispanics and non-Hispanic whites. So what was very good for Hispanics in the New Mexico economy was something approaching full employment. There were very few people looking for work. And I think under those circumstances, when the demand for labor is very high, problems like wage theft and other mistreatment of the workforce don't incur so very often. One of the things that really drove this was the construction area. Construction employment went up a lot during the period of the housing bubble. In the 2003 to 2008 period, it went way up, and Hispanics are concentrated in the construction industry, especially Hispanic males are concentrated in that industry. So when there's a tremendous demand for construction workers, the wages in that sector went way up, and the unemployment of Hispanic males went way down. I think the other thing that I would want to emphasize is that the immigration, what the census calls foreign-born people, but there are also estimates of the undocumented population in New Mexico, and historically we haven't thought of New Mexico as a state with a tremendously high undocumented population, but that's changed over the last 10 or 15 years, and now we have about the 10th highest proportion of undocumented people in the country, according to the Pew Hispanic Center. So that's it is a change, and it represents challenges for us. The immigrant population is, as recently as 8 or 9 years ago was about 50%. The Hispanic population was about 15% immigrants, and now it's about 20% immigrants. So that makes it much more difficult to improve the situation for Hispanics in New Mexico, considering that considering the large concentration of workers in construction. So as that's begun to recover, that will help the Hispanic population in New Mexico. But the kinds of jobs that we're adding now tend to be in retail trade and tourism, and Hispanics are represented in those areas. But those are fairly low wage jobs, and that probably won't lead to much economic advancement for Hispanics until we start adding jobs and adding jobs for Hispanics in some of the higher paying sectors.
Are there any good news in this labor situation for Hispanic people through all the sectors of the economy?
One of the trends that did take place over the 2000 to 2010 period was that there is an increase in the number of Hispanics getting higher education and moving into the professional and business services sector. So I was encouraged by that. But as it stands in New Mexico, probably only 18 or 20% of the jobs require higher education. Another 10 or 15% require some education, but probably 2/3 of the jobs in New Mexico are jobs that require only a high school education or less. So as the Hispanic population becomes more educated, I think there's some chance that a lot of the Hispanic graduates will leave the state.
How does this situation affect families, especially children? I know that New Mexico Voices of Children have another report related with this.
One of the crucial things that's come to light in our research and looking at the data from the Census Department and the Labor Department is that about half of New Mexico's population of children under 18 are Hispanics. So 50% of children under 18 are Hispanics in New Mexico. Only about 25% are non-Hispanic whites. So what affects the labor force participation and performance of Hispanics is going to affect their children very directly, and so looking at the concentration of Hispanic children makes us even more concerned about the performance of their parents in the labor market.
After this musical cut, we'll talk with Dr. Jerry Bradley and Dr. Andrew Schrank about which are the steps we can take to improve this situation. With this situation of talking with Jerry Bradley and Dr. Andrew Schrank on Labor Day, our next step is to talk about which are the main policy changes or solutions or steps to action, I would say, first, better than solutions, to try to improve this situation. What are your suggestions, Dr. Schrank?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that here in New Mexico and really throughout the country, almost all of the inspections that are carried out of employers for wage theft are carried out post hoc, after a complaint has been lodged. But in our survey, we found that almost none of the victims actually reported the crime to any authority at all. About 10% reported the crime, and that fewer than 10% reported them to an authority who actually had jurisdiction over the crime. So if you're really waiting for the reports to come in and investigating post hoc, you're just not going to find the criminals. So we think at least two things need to be done. First of all, we think that workers, and immigrant workers in particular, need to be made aware aware of their rights and about where to go when those rights are being violated. And this needs to be done extensively, and it needs to be done in Spanish as well as in English. And we also think that the government needs to be carrying out more proactive inspections, preemptive inspections. And there's a lot of data out there and a lot of strategies out there that would help the government figure out which types of firms, which sectors are most prone to this behavior, to carry out preemptive sort of inspections so that you could try to, you know, nip this problem in the bud and begin to effectuate some form of deterrence. Part of the solution is to actually allocate a lot more resources to Workforce Solutions and the Federal Wage and Hour Division, these agencies, so that they could carry out these types of inspections. And I like to remind people that this is a crime, and we should think about it as a crime and give it the resources that, law enforcement and crime control really, really need. The final solution I would suggest is to actually prosecute the crime when it is found to the fullest extent of the law. There are actually pretty stiff penalties on the books for wage theft in New Mexico. But even when people are discovered committing wage theft and are prosecuted, rarely are they prosecuted to the full extent of the law, treble damages and things like that. And we think that treble damages, which are legally allowed, should actually be effectuated.
And in the big landscape of the labor situation, Mr. Bradley, which are the policy changes you are suggesting in your report to try to improve or to take steps towards improving at least a little bit this situation that, from your reports, it has been worsening and worsening, and not we can't go further down the floor, but I think we can go a little bit upper than that.
Well, one of the issues that's become very clear is that a fifth of the Hispanic population in New Mexico is foreign-born now. So it's obvious that one of the solutions to improving labor market outcomes, to improving wages and income, would be immigration reform, so that immigration reform with a path to citizenship, so that those 20% of Hispanics who are foreign born would be able to have a stronger bargaining position in the labor market. Along with that, I think that along with wage theft, I think that there is an under-researched area is labor market discrimination against Hispanics. I think pretty clearly that that's contributing to the discrepancy between Hispanics and Anglos in wages and household income. Other issues that would affect low-wage workers more generally would be increasing the minimum wage, increasing unionization, especially in the construction industry, and helping the whole economy as well as the health of the working population would be full implementation of the Affordable Care Act. So full implementation of health care reform, adding all of the qualified people to the Medicaid program and a strong insurance exchange program would be some of the things that we could do to cut down on the discrepancy between Hispanic and Anglo workers.
What the unions do related with this topic?
I think that that without unions, workers are without a voice, and individual workers trying to bargain with their employers are just at such a tremendous power disadvantage that they really don't have any hope of improving things just from just bargaining as individuals. So it's not only it's an issue of power to some degree, but it's also an issue of dignity, and organized workers are workers that have some more power, that have some dignity in their workplace and have some say in how they're treated.
I want to also to share the opinion and also the work center that has been recently founded by Somos Un Pueblo Unido. Let's listen what this is about. I know that you founded through Somos Un Pueblo Unido a work center. What does this center provide to workers who could need help?
Well, we've had a pretty robust workers' rights component. We've worked closely with unions and church groups and other activists in Santa Fe to raise the minimum wage, the city minimum wage. Now we're very much engaged in a campaign to improve and extend that minimum wage to the county, since many immigrant workers live in the city, live in the county, work in the county, and so are not making the same minimum wage as everyone else who works in the city limits of Santa Fe. So we're engaged in these kinds of policy campaigns, but we also form worksite committees that are based in the individual worksite where there are problems with sexual harassment, with health and safety issues, with wage theft, abusive treatment by managers or supervisors. And so people, even though they don't necessarily have unions to go to, because in the absence of low-wage worker union organizing here in New Mexico, people are still standing up for their rights. We help folks file complaints. We have a part-time attorney just to deal with wage theft issues and wage cases. And so we invite not just the immigrant community, but all low-wage workers who are not a part of the union to come to the Worker Center, get informed about their rights, get information on how they can organize in their workplace, and really just change the conditions of their workplace and improve them, because everyone ultimately deserves to get paid for what the hours that they work, to get paid overtime. There are certain standards that are not being adhered to, and we really are trying to, again, change the culture in New Mexico so that workers can work with the dignity that they deserve.
Thank you, Marcela, for all this information, and especially thank you for all your community solidarity, and I know all you work so hard. Thank you so much for this interview.
Gracias,
Cristina. Gracias a ti. And thank you, Jerry Bradley and Dr. Schrank, for staying with us with Espejos Aztlán, especially with this topic about a labor situation in New Mexico.
Thank you.
Ojalá que toda la gente que está pasando por la misma situación que nosotros también alce la voz y no se queden callados para que no les sigan robando sus salarios.
¿Y tú qué le aconsejarías a la gente?
Bueno, muchas personas a veces no se quejan o no dicen nada porque, pues es que solo me están robando 6 horas o 4 horas. Pero pónganse a pensar que a ti son 4, a lo mejor a tu compañero son 6, a lo mejor a tu otro compañero son 10, y eso es cada semana o cada quincena. Y finalmente quien termina ganando es la compañía, y no es justo.
I want to thank you as well to Henry González for the voice in part of the production of this Espejos Aztlán, to Robert Valdez in the production of today's show, and I invite you for our next Espejos Aztlán next Monday, September the 9th at 7 p.m. with host Adam Aguirre, who will sit down with Santa Fean musician Jerry Lopez to reflect on Jerry's own rich musical New Mexican heritage. My name is Cristina Bachin. You can leave your comments on KUNM.org or to espejos@KUNM.org.
Y no es justo.